Okay, let's begin. Please, Alice, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, say your name first and last for the record, and we'll begin.
Alice Cole, Director of the Tompkins County Health Department. And in lieu of a PowerPoint presentation this evening, I brought a prop. This is the elephant in the room. At the health department, we continue to meet the ever-increasing demand for services without increasing staff. But our main question is, and in light of Mr. Swine Flu, how long can we continue to do this? Another example is most frequently one weekend in August, we had to give 14 people post-exposure shots for rabies. This incident could have been prevented if people had heeded our message of not touching wildlife. And just to remind you that the post-exposure series for rabies post-exposure, it's based on the person's weight, but the price is anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000. So rabies post-exposure unnecessarily is very costly. The nation, we're still not prepared to meet a global health threat, and we don't have the infrastructure or the will to contain an epidemic. H1N1 planning and the clinics that are needed to prevent the spread of the disease will exhaust our resources. Can the county rise to this challenge? Or will the public face the consequences of the eroding funding that has been occurring for many years to the public health infrastructure? We came to you, we came within our budget guidelines, we didn't ask for more staff, but we're surely going to need it. The other challenge that we're going to be facing this fall is sometime in the near future we're going to be moving to Brown Road, and that's going to be in the midst of trying to immunize 60,000 people for H1N1. So our mantra this fall is going to be patience and flexibility. We know we're not going to make people happy. We're not going to meet everyone's needs. We're going to need the entire community to make this H1N1 vaccination campaign successful. And you're going to hear individually from my department or from my division managers, and I urge you to support all of our OTRs. You may think that just the nurses are important in the time of a pandemic, but we're going to need our entire staff as well as the entire county workforce to be able to immunize just the target groups, let alone the entire population, which will be ultimately our goal. So I turn it over to Brenda to talk about the OTRs that are in our planning and coordination unit and administration.
And once real quickly before I jump into the OTRs, that in addition to our handout that we provided that Alice just referred to and I will be referring to, we did provide you some additional data on our staffing patterns since 1997. Those are based on funded positions at the end of the budget process, in addition to some financial trend data that several people have asked us for. So we have just provided that to all of you. If there's questions, I'll address those later. We have an OTR out for a systems analyst. We have one systems analyst on staff. That person works with all of our staff, which is around 100 people, including contractors. She oversees and manages the 77 desktops that we have, 48 laptops, a majority of which are out in the field for nursing staff to help expedite and keep their workflow moving. We have three servers plus a test server. We have 18 printers and 5 Toshiba printers, scanners, fax, and copiers that she also handles. She spends a majority of her time working on a program that we call Cerner, or for some of you, you'll remember the Beyond Now system. It's now the Cerner system. And she spends almost half her time dealing with various work requests, upgrades, and data issues related to that, including custom programming to meet state and internal reporting requirements. You'll notice on the highlights that one of the items is developing a customized database for tracking and billing immunizations, including the H1N1 and our flu clinics, that will allow staff to electronically upload data into a state system called the New York State Immunization Information System, which is a mandate for area providers as well as for the health department. Katie, our systems analyst, has been developing a program to help us with that and to expedite that data upload rather than duplicate entry. That program is still in a development phase and testing phase with the hopes to implement that at our very first flu clinic this fall. She also does numerous custom reports to meet data requests, which I had mentioned. Alice mentioned the move to Brown Road. When we move to Brown Road, the department will have a new phone system, which will require training and support for all staff as we get used to this new phone system, and we'll be migrating from a Novell system to a Windows-based system for all of our servers. That is all in process now, but until we move, a lot of that training will not occur. If this position is not funded, we feel that we're going to feel the impacts in not being able to complete some of this custom program that will help improve staff efficiencies, as well as we'll have delays in upgrades for our various custom programs, either from the state or from custom software that we've purchased. This could impact on our ability to bill if we don't keep our upgrades done on some of our custom software. The next OTR that I'll talk about is for...
I'm sorry. We're missing page 2 on this
numbers.
You're also missing page 4, and you're missing part of the charts in the back. Norm, I gave Norma the corrected version. She's running copies.
Okay. We're shuffling papers. Because we don't want
Okay. Sounds like that's being rectified, but I'll keep talking.
Okay.
The second OTR that I'll talk about, which will be on page 2, is the administrative assistant. That's a reduction to half time. She currently is working 60% time. That reduction in hours will have a great impact on administrative staff as she provides support for 4 key people. The note says 3, but there's actually 4 of us that rely on this person to provide administrative support. Even at 60% time, it's not enough for all of the work that she needs to do, and with the increasing response requirements for H1N1, the reduction in clerical support is really detrimental, and it causes some of the professional staff to then spend time doing clerical things that we could otherwise have staff filling in to handle. The public health director needs full-time clerical support. We've managed with the 60%, but really in light of some of the things that are changing and the requirements that keep coming, the full-time position is really needed.
Thank you. My name is Sigrid Connors. I'm Director of the Patient Services, and I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with you today. Our division has 2 of the OTRs for the health department, and I'm going to speak to those. One is the community health nurse. I believe it's number 38. And on your list, and number 41 is the senior account clerk typist. And of note, because I know this question has been asked in the past, if these OTRs are not funded, these positions will lose their job. We've given you a lot of information and detail in the OTR package and the budget information that you have for you to consider. So I really can't take all the time to review all of that detail. I can only reinforce the information that we've given you. Speaking about the clerical position, in the health promotion program, I've noted one highlight for you, which is the New York State Public Health Excellence Award. And that's just one example of so many of the 110% that our staff give to their work. And for this clerical position, we use this higher level position to support my position and to support the health promotion team of 4 staff. And in our current economy, we need to prove that our work is efficient and effective. And we need the skills to maintain and analyze the data to prove our worth to you and to assure the taxpayers of the value they receive for their hard-earned dollars. And that's the level of work this position provides. Moving on to the community health nurse, that's OTR number 38. I think it's pretty clear that health care is an essential need, although this seems to be rather debatable lately. But this position provides essential health services, and including vaccinations for those without a medical home. We know the outcome of these vaccinations is a reduction of the incidence of disease in our community. This nurse also provides nursing visits in the home for low-income pregnant women. And we know the outcome of these visits are a healthier birth outcome for the mother and for the baby. And in light of the challenges that the novel H1N1 influenza virus that's represented here presents to our community and to our staff, we should be sitting here asking you for additional staff. Yet we are in the position where we are having to defend the ones we already have. In 2001, we had four more nursing positions than we have today. So we have been seeing reductions over the years. And if we lose this nursing position in the community health services program, we will be reduced from 5.5 to 4.5 nurses. And our nurses are currently providing the seasonal influenza shots. And these we hope to finish by mid-October so that we'll be ready for the H1N1 vaccine to start the vaccination process should it be here. We've identified 60,000 target and priority groups that this vaccine would be geared towards in the beginning. And those are the infants, children, and adults, pregnant women, pretty much anybody under 24 and younger, and those with chronic illnesses up to 64. Should this vaccination campaign begin, we really need all of the nurses that we can possibly have. We need our nurses to proactively plan and respond to critical public health needs of our community. Their knowledge, their skills, and education and preparation is our best defense for our protection. And I really hope that you'll keep these public health needs in mind as you make these very difficult budget decisions. Thank you.
Mike and then Mike.
Can we ask that questions be held till the end?
Oh, I thought you... Oh.
Thanks for that.
Hi, I'm Sylvia Allender. I'm the Director of Children with Special Care Needs at the Health Department. This involves two of the larger mandated programs, the Early Intervention Program and Preschool Special Education. I have one OTR, which is OTR number 40 for an account clerk typist, and then I have OTR 44, which is for a new initiative. The account clerk typist is part of a staff of five support staff for the Children with Special Care Needs Division. Dollar for dollar in volume, the CSCN support staff bills in expenditure and claims in revenue a very significant amount of monies in early intervention and preschool special education. The expenses for this year for both programs total $6.8 million, which will generate approximately $4 million in revenue. All of this is billed and generated by this support staff of five. Reduction of this person would, of course, reduce this staff to four. In addition, the support staff also produces all vouchers biweekly and monthly for all contract staff, including private individuals, agencies, all of the school districts, and for transportation. This amounts to contracts, 95 different contracts that they produce vouchers and do this every 2 weeks to monthly. Support staff also reviews all supporting documentation with each bill submitted to ensure all federal, state Department of Health, education, and Medicaid requirements are met. The account clerk typist has a very, very large role in the review and entry of all of this supporting documentation and data entry. This account clerk typist also transcribes approximately 50% of all service coordination day-to-day dictated notes in the early intervention program. Dictation of service coordination notes has enabled the community health nurse service coordinators to regularly maintain higher caseloads, thus reducing our need for increasing our nursing staff at this time. And that was a strategic move on our part because we knew we would not be able to increase or afford to increase nursing staff, thus shifting some of the workload to support staff. Elimination of this position require this high volume of contract provider billing and data entry and transcription work to be divided among the rest of the support staff who are currently stretched to capacity. One of the things that I have done within the division is to eliminate our half-time position. 2 years ago, I eliminated half of this full-time position. It is now a half-time position of our director of preschool special education. That work has been divided among myself and some other professional staff and support staff. So we took a voluntary cut in this budget to help reduce our expense, if you will. But I don't feel that I can do without this account clerk typist also. The new initiative. Why would I be asking for a new initiative in this budget season? It's not something that I want to take on. It's more of a regulatory requirement that I am being forced to look at alternative measures to meet mandated requirements that I'm not able to meet. In the early intervention program, from the date of referral to the completion of the initial or individualized family service plan, federal regulation allows 45 days for process completion. This process includes the core evaluation of the child to determine early intervention eligibility. The core evaluation is the evaluation by two professionals that evaluates all five developmental domains of the child. The U.S. Department of Education, the Office of Special Education, or OSEP, standard for compliance is 100%. We are not able to meet that requirement. This will be the third year that this standard is monitored annually by the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Early Intervention. Due to the limited availability of approved early intervention evaluators in our county, our early intervention program is not able to meet this OSEP standard. As a division, we have implemented major paradigm shifts in staff responsibilities to help facilitate some increased compliance with this standard. We have gone from approximately 60% compliance to the high 70s. We have also had numerous meetings with our primary evaluating agency, which has resulted in further changes for the agency, the Francisca Racker Centers, and for us as a division. The New York State Department of Health is very aware of our efforts thus far. In our last corrective action plan to the New York State Department of Health Bureau of Early Intervention, we have now proposed the development and implementation of an early intervention evaluation team pending county legislative approval. The New York State Department of Health is very aware of our dilemma and has accepted our corrective action plan. No approval of this OTR will result in increased Department of Health mandated corrective actions, and by the fourth audited year of not meeting this standard, we will face fiscal implications. This coming year will be our third year. I have spoken with the director of the Bureau of Early Intervention. He understands the fiscal crisis being faced by our county. I have explained to him, and he's very aware of the paradigm shifts that we have made internally and of the improvement in our regulatory standard But in our continued inability to be able to meet that standard because we only have one primary evaluation team. He assured me that in this third year there would be, again, increased paperwork compliance that I would have to do, which, of course, I'm more than willing to do. I certainly understand that this is a very challenging fiscal time. I worked very hard to make this initiative cost neutral. By the fourth year, which would be the 2011 budget, I would be facing as a program fiscal implications. So although I may not and understand that I may not be able to have this initiative this year, I did propose it because it was in my corrective action plan, and I ask you to please keep this in mind for the following budget year if we can't implement this year. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Liz Cameron, Director of Environmental Health for Tompkins County in the Health Department. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to explain our budget situation here. I respect the difficult position you're in and the magnitude of the decisions that you will need to make. As I'm sure most of you are aware, environmental health covers a broad range of programs. In this year, we've had a number of successes. One was in our mobile home park program. 10% of the mobile home parks in Tompkins County had failed or illegal sewage systems or inadequate public water supplies. We took enforcement action, and those situations have been resolved, improving the conditions for a number of our residents. We also expect to issue a record number, 300 of our temporary food services establishment permits. These are the things for your chicken barbecues, your festival events. This is a 15% increase from what we did last year in 2008, where we had a record number of 260 permits. So these are continuing to increase and be an additional workload for us. We're also seeing a 10 times increase in the number of violations during our inspections at these facilities. During our normal restaurant inspection program, where we for permanent facilities, we're also seeing 156 violations. These are situations that could cause foodborne illness to be transmitted to others. This is, again, a double the number of violations we saw in 2008. Alice mentioned the multiple post-exposure rabies treatment shots where 14 people had to receive treatment. Our office was the one that investigated the incident where a person was harboring a rabid raccoon in their kitchen and visitors were petting this animal. So that was part of the work in our work from our office. Additionally, we're addressing community concerns with gas drilling, which is a very complex, multidisciplinary issue facing us. It's difficult now to meet our state mandates with existing staff. We will not be able to meet our current mandates with the proposed budget without the OTR that we are proposing, which is OTR number 39 in your budget book. This is one FTE public health sanitarian. Without this OTR, we will have to decrease the frequency and the scope of our inspections in almost all of our program areas, in addition to implementing other changes in different programs. This will affect public water supplies, hotels, motels, our mobile home parks, almost our whole range of programs. If the proposed targeted budget, the proposed budget goes forward as target, we will lose one half-time sanitarian position. This is an existing position. In addition, another sanitarian's time will be reduced from a full FTE to 0.4 FTE. By going below half-time, this person will also lose their benefits. This is a person who is a certified food safety inspection officer. We have a limited number of these in our division, and it's an area where we need additional expertise. She was also recently trained in our children's camp program, which is another area where we are short of expertise in the division. The reductions in our Inspections are described in detail in your OTR number 39 in your book, page 137 on one of the page numbers, but I'm not quite sure how they're referenced. In order to implement these changes, it requires the approval of the New York State Department of Health, because these are mandated programs and mandated inspections. In addition, we'll need to change the Tompkins County Sanitary Code as well as the Environmental Health Fee Schedule to address these changes. So I just would like to close by saying we have very committed and hardworking staff in environmental health. They strive very hard to serve and protect the public, and we'll hope you will seriously consider our request for the OTR so we can continue to meet our important public health mandates. Thank you.
Now we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mike Winkler and then Mike Sigrid.
A quick question of clarification. For Sigrid, you mentioned 60,000 as a number of target population. That
yes.
seemed 60,000 out of 100,000 in our county
yep.
would be the primary.
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I heard the number correctly.
Children under 5 and under, children 4 to 24, and that includes all of your K through 12 and daycare. It's pregnant women and persons who are 24 to 64 who have chronic health conditions or underlying medical conditions.
Okay, I just want to...
Oh, and also, I'm sorry, important part, healthcare workers and emergency medical service personnel as well.
Okay, the number boggled my mind and I want to make sure I heard it correctly. For Sylvia, you had mentioned you were working hard to make the request for the evaluation team cost neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Explain how that might come about, not necessarily this year, but as it rolls forward.
When I figured out the salaries and fringe benefits, right? Go to the next. When I looked at these three positions, I figured, with Brenda's help, salary, fringe benefits, right down to the telephone costs, transportation for fuel for them to drive to clients' homes, et cetera, et cetera. Total amount was figured out, and then I figured out how many evaluations and how many services they would have to provide to come out cost even, and I think we actually came out with about a $16,000 profit or revenue, if you will, and covered every single expense of these three positions.
Because you're able to bill for the services.
Yes, we're able to bill for all of these services and generate revenue back to cover them.
So I guess my question for County Administrator, not for now, but maybe for eventually, is that doesn't seem to be reflected in the request that's coming to us in OTR 44, that it's cost neutral. But I'll follow up a different time.
Okay. Mike Sigler. My question was about the, you're saying that you need this nurse to combat the, H1N1 flu.
I mean, should we wait till we do this budget? Because it's actually happening now, so I'm kind of curious, maybe we should, like, if you're saying we need this, it almost seems like we're waiting when we shouldn't be waiting. So that's my basic question.
Well, we are not able to wait, so we're going to be hiring temporary staff.
Okay.
So,
I just don't see it going away. I don't know. It just seems to me that maybe we should be doing this now. I know you're doing this now, but maybe we should be helping them to do this now.
Well, we have the position now.
Okay.
The change obviously wouldn't occur until January 1.
Okay.
Martha, then Pam.
I have a lot of questions, and I think I've lost most of them. But one is for Joe. I think we asked somewhere along the line. I'd like a list of which positions actually involve layoffs, and that's throughout the whole budget, because
right.
it seems to be coming to us in bits and pieces. So
yes, I can provide that. I don't know if we want to talk about the ones here that would involve layoffs, or I can just give you a background table.
In general, yes, but I guess I would ask...
I think staff were pretty clear about which of the positions as they spoke.
Mm-hmm.
Most of them were layoffs. We had the two in our division are reductions in hours.
Okay.
And we've also lost positions in the base budget as well. So those...
Okay. You started to point to somebody else, Jim. I have a follow-up. All right, so you said there's some in the base budget. You said that the reclass of, that's OTR 41, I think, the reclass of the account clerk typist to senior account clerk to account clerk typist would involve a layoff if not funded?
Right, the senior account clerk typist position person would lose their position.
They don't have an encumbered position. They would not be able to move to a lower level, to the lower level position. They have no rights
have
to
no
that lower
rights.
Level position.
The person was reclassed?
This OTR is a reclass.
We're trying to reclass the position downward from a senior level to a lower level.
Okay. But because there is an OTR for an account clerk typist, if that OTR is not approved, the senior person would lose their job because they would be the lowest senior as far as longevity with the county with no rights to any other title. That person would lose their job. Somebody will get moved within the department.
Okay.
Pam.
Liz, could you, I got a little confused about the sanitarian positions. There were two sanitarian positions. One was a full-time position and one was a part-time position. Is that what we had?
It's one FTE that we're requesting in our OTR. If we don't get that, we have a half-time sanitarian that will lose that position, and then we'll have a person who's currently in a full-time position who will be reduced to 0.4. FTE.
She also lost time in the base budget.
The base budget.
There's a sanitarian reduction in the base budget.
0.1.
Okay, so we would end up with a 0.4 number of an employee sanitary. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Leslie.
Although it may be hypothetical or just ballpark, Sylvia, what I'm interested in finding out or getting from you, I guess I have to be now, is you keep mentioning fiscal implications and the creation of the evaluation team and what that may look like. So I'm interested in finding out what would that look like for the department if the state is going to fine or...
Yeah. Excuse me, would you use the microphone, please, to answer?
Cost money. It doesn't have to be now. If you have the answer, great.
I asked Mr. Hutton, who's the director of the Bureau of Early Intervention for New York State, and he could not tell me what that would look like.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Just know that
it's a big threat.
Nathan, and then Will, and then Carol.
Yeah. With the before I could support adding another community health nurse, I'm just I'm looking at the community health services unit. And there's 13.27 community health nurses there. And there's just such a long list of things that that particular unit works on. So I was just, is there a way that, because in all likelihood I'll probably end up supporting the position, but I would like to know, exactly what the breakdown of those community health nurses is to those respective areas or,
I can speak to that right now.
Okay.
The 13.27.
Yeah.
8 FTE are in the home care program.
Okay.
About 0.7 of those nurses one nurse is in the health promotion program, and the other 5.5 are in the community health services program.
Right. And then, the ones that are in the home health agencies, they're going to homes and managing that and whatnot, but the 5.5 that are just community health in general, what's the breakdown of how much time do they spend doing, education versus immunizations, that kind of stuff. I think it would just be helpful so that I could feel more comfortable supporting that additional position. I don't expect you to know that off the top of your head right now.
Well, in the OTR information that you have in your packet,
right.
I've given you percentages of what we will lose in terms of vaccinations, home visits, hepatitis B home visits, lead poisoning prevention home visits. So I've given you specific breakdowns of the number of visits and percentage. So it should be in there.
Yeah, page 156.
I just didn't. All right. It's fine.
But I'm happy to answer any more questions.
I'll pass. You'll pass. Thank you. Carol.
Yeah, I want to understand also a little bit more about the relationship between the need to maybe adjust our priorities to deal with the current pandemic and what we normally do. Mike had asked about immunizations, and you'd mentioned the 60,000 immunization figure. Is that based on two swine flu or H1N1 flu shots per person plus one regular flu shot? So we're talking about three shots per person that we vaccinate.
It does end up being three. Currently, we are doing the seasonal influenza shots now. And if you are 9 and older, then you would get one shot. Children who are under 9 usually get two shots because they have they don't have very mature immune systems, so they need the two shots to boost their immunity. With the swine flu vaccine, as we know it now, because it keeps changing, we believe it will be a two-shot dose. So one shot, and then 28 days later, there'll be another shot. And at this point, they're still saying that we would have two shots.
But I think, Carol, to answer your question, it's 60,000 people getting three shots.
That was my question, yeah.
Right. That's not the number multiplied by three. It's those 60,000 will need three shots.
Okay, and given
180,000.
Given the numbers that we're seeing in the community already, are we likely to see this move through our community before these?
But we're going to see and continue increase in numbers because we have no idea when we're getting the vaccine.
Okay, and then tying to I think maybe where Nathan was going, if we have 13 community health nurses, do we have any nimbleness in the system? If this is the high priority that we all seem to think it is, to build that into our base budget and do it now and adjust our priorities rather than approach it as an over-target request? Shouldn't something else be an over-target request and this should be a basic something we provide to the community?
I can speak to that in that when we have to take 6.5% off of our budget, we can't take positions, we can't take nurses that generate a lot of revenue. We looked at taking a home care nurse instead of a community health nurse, but the home care nurse revenue would be so significant, the loss of that, that we would end up having to take two home care nurses out. The personnel is the only place we can cut. We've gone bare budget on all of the other than personnel costs. So salary is all we can go to. And do we need the clerical staff? Yes. Do we need the nurses? Yes. I mean, they're all essential.
Martha, Nate, and Mike.
In the H1N1 target population, you included up to age 24, and we have thousands of those. And I wondered, is there what kind of support is coming from Cornell and Ithaca College?
We anticipate that the colleges will be responsible for vaccinating their students, but not necessarily the faculty and staff. They will do within their capacity to vaccinate.
So of the 60,000 people, not shots, 60,000 people, how many would the universities be responsible for?
20,000? I don't know for sure. But
there's
TC3
so
has one nurse.
Right.
I mean, to give you an example, Ithaca College has maybe four. So not many. Four. Okay. Sorry.
The other unknown factor is the federal government is going to give the provider entities the vaccine free of charge. We know we're getting the vaccine. In the next week or so, the State Health Department is going to offer this vaccine to colleges and local providers in the hospital. We don't know if they will be willing to accept it. We're hoping they will because we can't do this by ourselves. And we are already working with all of the community organizations that we plan with for our all-hazards plan. But we won't know until the doctors respond back to the state and say whether they're going to take the vaccine or not. And you have to remember what our mission is at the health department is we have to provide service to the most vulnerable. So if the colleges or whoever or the hospital says we can't handle certain segments of the population, such as the un- and underinsured, that will be our role. That's clear and simple.
I have Nate, and then I have Mike Catterer, but Joe, did you want to slip in with a comment?
I guess just a point of clarification, though, and I understand that every position relates to every other position. So when we talk about OTRs that involve personnel, I understand those relationships. The one, though, that's most directly related to the inoculation effort, which is the community health nurse, we've recommended that that OTR be funded. So we're on the same page as the health department on that one that relates to H1N1 and the other inoculations.
Thank you, Nate.
Yeah, and I guess my question was more, there's education and there's vaccinations, but what is like the breakdown of the current nursing? I mean, so this position, if you reduced it, you would lose all this additional service, but what's the breakdown of time that everybody else does? Like, in other words, are there primary core services versus secondary things, and could those people that are doing more, say, education-related things, and education is very important, I know a lot of it's required, and it's not... When I say education, I don't mean that lightly. Could that energy be used to, do seasonal flu vaccinations so that if this position isn't filled, 900 seasonal flu vaccinations could still happen. That was kind of my question.
Of the other nurses, they're providing anonymous HIV counseling and testing. They're doing tuberculosis case management. Five active cases this year and over 250 latent TB infections. They're tracking communicable diseases, and in the information I gave you, I noted the significant increase in number of communicable diseases that we track and we case manage. We really can't pull them. Those are essential services.
Right. Okay, that's what I want.
Yeah.
Mike Catterer and then Frank.
I had two kind of on two different points. On the first one, on as you mentioned, some large delta in the increase in temporary food inspections or violations or both. Was it both? Number of inspections for temporary food.
We've significantly increased the number of temporary food inspections that we're doing with our additional summer sanitary issues. So we're more inspections, there were more violations, and the proportion was significantly higher.
Proportion of violations?
Yes.
And I guess my question there is...
Proportion was what I was referencing.
Have you also, because of your staff, been able to, or has it been required by the state, that you increase the stringency of the regulations on those temporary food service operations? Regulations are about the same?
No, we currently... have an agreement with the state that we do not have to inspect. We already have a break, I guess, from the state. We inspect 50% as our target of temporary food events, and so that's the reduction that they've already given us. And before we had our summer sanitarium, we were below that. We've been able to get up to that level now.
Yeah,
the actual regulations...
I wasn't very clear. What I meant was the actual level or the standard... the kinds of requirements that those temporary food operations have to meet now, have they changed?
They're the same.
I have one other. Can I?
Yeah.
On the evaluation team, is this, I had a hard time and maybe I need to read a little bit more. Is this something that we would call a required mandate, or is this something that is viewed as a professionally, desired change on the part of the department?
It's a regulatory mandate that we meet the OSEP standard of 100% compliance. New York State just started to audit, if you will, the counties in New York State, because New York State was, I think, fined by the federal government because they weren't monitoring this regulation, that the event from the point of referral to the writing of the family service plan has to be 45 days. 100% compliance is the federal mandate under IDEA, Individuals with Disability and Education Act. We have never been able to meet that standard in Tompkins County. As I said, we've made paradigm shifts in staffing and the way we work internally to increase by almost 20% our compliance rate. And we are centrally isolated. Folks don't want to travel to Onondaga County or Cayuga County to go to other evaluation teams. We're mandated to provide this evaluation in the home. And I have one evaluation agency in Tompkins County, and they do preschool and early intervention. We don't have this regulation in preschool, but between both programs, there are about, I'd say, 700 evaluations to 800 evaluations that have to be done each year, and one agency can't do that.
Frank.
Thanks, Jim. So the early intervention, 0 to 3s, the preschool physically handicapped children. A couple of years ago, we were making a valiant effort to try to get the state to either absorb some of those costs instead of just mandating everything and causing us the increases. Have you seen any movement at the state level? My recollection is we were spending upwards of $3 million a year on some of those programs. Has there been any movement at the state level that you're aware of where they're loosening up and will give us some flexibility? And part two, we were doing an evaluation with the Racker Center and with some of the kids that had to get services outside the community down in Binghamton for autism. There's at least four questions wrapped up in that. Can you say something about the costs and if anything has improved? Not just the service, but...
I think what you're referring to, Frank, is the preschool special education task force that the governor put together and made recommendation to the New York State Legislature last year. In that recommendation, they recommended that beginning this school year that the school districts take on 15% of the cost of preschool special education. In this fiscal climate, I'll be very candid with you, the school districts have a very strong lobby, and they won. The mandate did not, or the recommendation was not passed. So the full cost of supporting preschool special education is still incurred by the counties. In terms of special programming that you're referring to for autism services, if you will. The program in Binghamton provides a very unique type of service, and if a child needs that type of service, then we need to pay for that, the tuition for that service and transportation to Binghamton. The Racker Center is able to meet a significant number in Tompkins County, but not all. They only have 6 slots in Tompkins County and 6 slots in Cortland County, and we take up part of Cortland County's slots also for children on the autism spectrum.
One last one. The program in Binghamton, my recollection is that was costing us about $25,000 per child. Is that still approximately what the cost is?
Approximately for the... that's approximately what their rate is currently, but we currently do not have any children going to Binghamton.
And if someone is enrolled in a program like that, regardless of where the location is, and they don't show up, the county still has to pay the tab because you've allocated that slot to them?
It's a tuition-based service. the tuition is paid whether the child attends or not. However, you can be assured that I track very, very closely the attendance records of these children. If there is a pattern or if it drops below a certain number in a month, I am on the phone to the director of special education in that district. And if the child is not able to return for medical reasons or social-emotional reasons, then we go back to committee and fill that slot with a child that's able to attend.
Thank you. Thank you. Let me remind you that we have DSS here, and that's all I want to say.
I know. Maybe the time is
Go ahead and ask your question.
Okay. Other evaluations are done by the Record Centers, right?
What do you mean by other evaluations?
I mean, the evaluations that are done now are done by the nonprofit.
The majority, yes.
So we have some evaluators on our staff already, or
no?
No, there's other independents or other agencies that.
In early intervention, we have two other agencies outside of Tompkins County that families elect to use, maybe 5% of the time.
Okay. All right. I guess a question is, and maybe I'm just wondering if there's something like an RFP for these services, to contract with, to see which of the providers might be able to, willing and able to do, to increase the number of evaluators. I mean, if we can recruit them and put them on staff, Racker Centers could. For example. So
Martha, we have tried that with several agencies outside of Tompkins County, inviting them to come in and start a team in with our contract providers, and both times that we've tried this initiative, it hasn't worked. And I'll be very candid with you as to why it has not worked, because they can make much more money as independent contractors than working for an agency.
Right.
Will.
Still trying to get clarity on this, and I'm sorry that we keep hammering on this. What I heard you say was that we have essentially one more budget year.
Correct.
Under the current understanding of the mandate.
Correct.
By next year, we have to have this in place.
In terms of a corrective action plan.
There's no penalty for waiting to the last moment.
Well, it's just, whether they say you'll do this paperwork and this, and you'll look at that number and this. I can do all that. That's just more work for me in terms of studying and creating documents. I can do that. But when it begins to hit fiscally, then I'm very concerned.
And I heard you say you have really no idea what the fiscal impact is.
I have no idea.
Okay. Would there be any virtue to, you have to, is it all or nothing? Do you have to have the entire team in place, or do you do
I actually cut the team down. The team started out as 6 professionals. I cut it down to 3 professionals. We would not be able to have an evaluation team with less. It's a physical therapist, a special education teacher, which is a great generalist, if you will, and a speech pathologist. I eliminated the occupational therapist, a social worker, and a psychologist. We have to be able to look at the whole child in every area of development.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. I, as one of those people who, I don't think I'm eligible for the H1N1 chat, I'm a little too old, but I am in a special group. I forgot who the last person raised their hand. Was it you, Billy? Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. I'm on page 141 in the line item budget, and maybe I should understand this, but I don't. Under early intervention, it's a big decrease in the cost of supplies as an OTR request. Could you explain that to me, please?
Thank you. Go ahead, go to the microphone.
I'm not quite sure what you mean.
I'm on page 141. I'm looking under early intervention units, and I'm looking at line 54400. And that's like
we have an answer here.
Okay, quarter million.
Well, I mean, there's certainly more to answer, but this was part of the plan to develop this program. It's savings, anticipated savings in that program.
Assuming that the early intervention
team
gets made.
Right.
Okay, thank you. It's a lot of supplies.
If there are no other questions, I would like to say thank you very much to the health department officials who are here and move on to ESS if they still want to.
No.
Can
I say no?
Yeah, well, yeah. We can do it over the phone.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi.
Patricia, I would just like you and your colleague to introduce yourselves for the record, please, on the microphone.
Patricia Carey, Commissioner of Social Services.
Thomas Herden, Director of Administrative Services for the Department of Social Services.
We will endeavor to make this as painless as possible. What I wanted to start out with, I gave you a handout in happy yellow so that you could pick it up at a moment's notice and follow along. We were asked to sort of try to do our presentation within a certain framework, and we'll try and follow that. The first sheet I gave you, I wanted to give you a snapshot of, as much as I could, a snapshot of a month of what we're doing in the Department of Social Services. Put some numbers to when we say the services that we provide, help you understand how many people in the county are actually.
I'm really sorry. There's some kind of a buzz. Static
in the speaker here.
It's really distracting.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Jim.
I asked staff to put together some numbers that would reflect what we are experiencing now at the Department of Social Services. These numbers are increasing even as I speak. But I hope this will give you a little bit of an idea of what we're doing. I think we presented in the past understand what public assistance, food stamps, HEAP, special services, child support, homeless services, Medicaid, children's services, and adult protective services are. The one division that's missing here is long-term care services, and I will get you some numbers from that division. I need to consult with Lisa a little bit because we share that some of the responsibilities for the long-term care program in the county. I wanted to speak a little bit about the accomplishments that we've had this year. We have moved from a standard child protective services hotline response model that New York State has traditionally had to we are one of five pilot counties that are doing the family assessment response model, which means that our workers can go and into homes and not do an investigation. They are able to go in and offer assistance to families to try to remedy the the issues that are present. We continue to monitor child safety, and that is our mandate, but we felt that we could do a different kind of intervention with the family assessment and response, and we're very pleased with our ability to do that. I think the other thing that we're very proud of in our department is that our staff in our temporary assistance and Medicaid and food stamps and HEAP have been experiencing increasing caseloads. They've been experiencing many people coming to the door who we can't serve yet because they still have resources that they can tap into, but they're really frantic with what might happen in the future. And our staff has responded very positively to try to reorganize, to expedite setting up appointments, making phone calls. We've had staff do food stamp outreach out in the community after hours. So I want to say that at a time when you could really be hunkering down and just hoping nobody else calls you up, our staff is opening our doors and trying to think very creatively. So I think the county should thank them.
So now on to the more complicated area. I'm going to have Tom speak a little bit. We were asked to speak about the challenges to putting this budget together, sort of that kind of framework, and I think Tom has a good handle on that and can explain it to you.
I'll try. Thank you, Frank. So I will be reviewing the significant factors impacting our 2010 budget request. Some of these will not be different, I expect, from what you've heard from other departments. The single largest item that is different in the 2010 request from our 2009 amended or modified budget is the re-inclusion of fringe benefits in the department's budget. That single line by itself represents an apparent increase of just over $3 million. It's only an apparent increase. As you all know, those costs were always there, but they had been centralized a couple of years ago. But while I'm speaking about fringe benefits, because they weren't in the 2009 budget, the increase in the fringe benefit rate that the department will be charged on our existing salary, the increase in the rate from 36% this year to 40.5% next year, will result in an increased expenditure on the part of the department and the county of approximately $381,000. Those costs are eligible for some federal and or state reimbursement. The net local cost of that $381,000 increase is in the neighborhood of $103,000. The next factor informing or impacting our 2010 budget request are the requests that we made last year for permanent funding of maintenance of effort requests, for permanent funding of maintenance of effort requests in a few areas, which ultimately were approved for one-year funding only. Altogether, those requests amount to approximately $360,000, and again, because they are eligible for some reimbursement, the net local cost of those recurring over-target requests is $164,000. The next item impacting our budget, or rather the part of our budget that is not in our base budget but is in our over-target requests, was the 6.2% fiscal target, reduction in our fiscal target. The fact that we get reimbursement on our expenditures in this case hurts us some because any given dollar figure that we are asked to reduce in that local cost is multiplied several times in order to reflect the reimbursement. So in this case, that fiscal target reduction of about $195,000 necessitated either cuts or over target items totaling approximately
$723,000.
190 generated 720? Yes, approximately. As the commissioner mentioned, we are seeing increased caseloads in many of the different programs that we run. to highlight a few, compared to the end of last August, at the end of August 2009, our family assistance caseloads are up 16%. And to put harder numbers on that, that's about 50 cases in that program. The Safety Net Assistance Program, which is New York State's version of public assistance for persons who aren't eligible for the federal program, is up 11% over that same 12-month period. In that case, that comes to about 40 more cases. It's worth noting for those who might not have this information readily to hand that the benefits paid, because it's a state program, the benefits paid to safety net clients are 50 cents on each dollar paid for those clients is a local cost. Our Medicaid caseload is up about 7.7% over last year, and that percentage is equivalent to about 450 cases. The food stamps caseload is up 21%. That's about 670 cases. And our child support program is serving 7.5% more families, and that is 330 more cases. Those last three programs, Medicaid, food stamps, and child support, there is no local cost consequence for increased expenditures or benefits received by those clients. Those programs are passing through federal money, or in the case of child support, collecting money from a non-custodial parent and passing it through for use of the support of his or her child or children. But with increased caseloads, there is an increased administrative burden. And the number of FTEs that the department 2010 budget request includes is 0.2 of an FTE fewer than was approved for 2009.
Just a 10-second question. We'll get copies of this page you're reading because it's a lot to digest.
Yeah.
And I see people scribbling notes as fast as possible. But
we could do that, sure.
Yeah. Okay. I think what we wanted to do is get questions so that we could flesh it out a little bit more.
Okay.
And give it to you then.
I consider that one.
Okay.
The next factor impacting our budget request falls in the category of reduced or eliminated state reimbursement. the two most significant areas where we have seen that either in the current state budget or at the end of last year in one case are as follows. Toward the end of last year, New York State altered the formula that it uses to determine how much to reimburse local districts for the cost of providing protective and preventive services for children and families. The formula still in law is that 65% of those costs that are not federally reimbursed will be reimbursed by the state. But last October, the state passed budgetary language saying implementing a 2% reduction in that 65% reimbursement. So we are presently getting 63.7%. of net of federal reimbursement for those program costs and administrative costs. In the current state budget, a feature of the current state budget was the discontinuation of a block grant that the state had implemented, I believe it was 4 years ago, in which they called the Local Administration Fund. It was an allocation of a single dollar amount to each local Department of Social Services, and it was intended to represent the state's contribution toward the administrative costs associated with the administration of public assistance, food stamps, and employment. For Tompkins County, last year and the year before, our allocation was $814,000, and in the current state budget, that funding was entirely eliminated. However, the state chose to use to increase the federal dollars that were allocated to districts, the TANF money that was allocated to districts through a federal block grant, by an equivalent amount. The state's claim or hope is that by adding an equivalent amount of federal dollars to this other block grant, that districts would be held harmless, that it would be a wash. But the two pots of money can't be used to reimburse for the same things, and there are requirements with respect to use of that federal block grant that limit the flexibility. Although it's called the Flexible Fund for Family Services, there are requirements that very severely restrict the flexibility for our use of those funds. At present, our district and at least several others in the state are far from certain that, in fact, this will end up being a wash. But at least in terms of dollars available, theoretically, the way that the state budget was structured this year, they do offset one another. The larger and, although temporary, more real change in federal revenue that is offsetting both some of our increased expenses and the loss of state reimbursement is the temporary increase in federal participation, chiefly in the Medicaid program. As part of the ARRA, the federal government made available to states increases in the federal reimbursement rate, which historically has been 50% of the benefit costs and the administrative costs for running the Medicaid program. And the worse a state's unemployment numbers were, the greater the increase in that reimbursement rate. And as of July 1st, New York State qualified for the maximum increase, which was 11.59%. The state hasn't yet released its calculations of how much that will reduce what otherwise would have been Tompkins County's or any other county's contribution toward the Medicaid program next year. But based on the figures that we do have for this year to date, our estimate is that that increase in the federal reimbursement rate will result in just a little over $1 million in local cost savings. That's good news. We've seen significant net local cost savings in 2009. The bad news is that this increase sunsets at the end of next year, unless the federal government renews that legislation and renews that funding.
When you say sunsets, whose fiscal year are you talking about?
Well, I said at the end of 2010, at the end of the calendar year.
Our fiscal year, okay.
Yes. Pardon?
No prompting.
I've been prompted about time. Time. Another and smaller but not insignificant area that the federal that the ARRA increased federal reimbursement was for some categories of foster care, where there's a temporary 2% increase in the federal reimbursement rate, also ending 12/31 of 2010, and we're anticipating in 2010 that will result in local cost savings for Tompkins County of about $52,000. Only two more bullets to go, big bullets to go for my part of the presentation. Another big change you may notice when you're reviewing our budget request is that the HEAP program, which in 2009 the appropriation line read $500,000, next year it reads just $25,000. The reason for that is that over the course of the current HEAP year, which runs on the federal fiscal year October to September, New York State has implemented direct payment from its financial system, from the State Comptroller's Office, to HEAP vendors. So the majority of payments from that program are no longer flowing through counties. It's no longer a pay and then get reimbursed model. We still do eligibility determinations, and that $25,000 that is still in the budget represents our payments to vendors who, for whatever reason, can't or won't participate in the direct payments from the State Comptroller's Office. So that $475,000 reduction, there is no net local cost impact for that because in all cases, HEAP benefits, whether they're flowing through the department or not, they are 100% federal money. The net result of all these, the figures that I've given above, is that excluding the reintroduction of fringe costs into our budget, the department's total budget request contains in it approximately $988,000 less in spending requests, and the net local cost is reduced by approximately $900,000. If we look only at planning and coordination, the two programs that are subject to the fiscal target, we are, and again, excluding fringes, we are asking, including our over-target requests, we're asking to spend approximately $350,000 less, and the net local cost decrease from 2009 to 2010 is $156,000. Despite those decreases, we do have over-target requests coming to just over $500,000 for the reasons that I cited earlier. $500,000 in local cost.
Are we ready for questions?
Questions?
Are we ready?
I think we're done.
Do you want me to go on to the over-target request?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought the long pause meant you were looking for...
No, I was waiting for the stunness to die out and for the activity to begin. So we struggled mightily with the over-target process. It's something that we take very seriously. We knew we needed to do what you asked and make the cuts, but we also needed you to see what it means to the county. It's in our department, it's very, very significant. We were able to make some adjustments in our budget and shift some things around and make some cuts that aren't shown as over targets, but ultimately, because of the enormous amount of money that we are forced to cut, we are going very deep into our programs and services, and for the first time since I've been here, putting staff out as over targets. And that's something I promised staff we wouldn't have to do, but this is a different time and place. So I gave you the handout. It's a little more, there's a little more detail in it than in the over target book. And it's handy. You can carry it around on the bus, so if you're just riding around and you want to look at it. I'm going to go through, because it is, you know, late and you're all been very patient and tired. I'll go through, I'm not going to read every word, but I'll sort of give you the highlights. So I've got staff are my highest priority to put back into the budget. As you heard, we are experiencing increases across the board. Cases are more complicated. there are more people coming in, and we need all the staff that we have. The county administrator has approved our number one priority, and he's approved our number two priority for one-time funding. So I'm going to go down to our series of priorities. We have a senior clerk position that has acted as a as an integral part of the programs and supporting the programs that we do in temporary assistance, food stamps, and HEAP. This person has expertise in processing cases that then go on to social welfare examiners to complete. This person is able to go to different units and provide support when we are short-staffed or we have increases in caseloads in any division in temporary assistance. Losing this person we will add the work they do will just be added back into the work that social welfare examiners are currently doing. I don't have any staff at that level who could pick up that work. It will just be added on to the work that the social welfare examiners do. Example is that this person does a lot of the phone interviews with clients so that we can expedite the case processing. That will now fall back to social welfare examiners who are also doing phone interviews. It'll just increase the number that they're doing. The impact is going to be our clients are going to not get served as expeditiously as they need to be served, and that's not palatable to us. The next priority are our project assistants. We are very proud of our ability to have this number of project assistants in our department. We believe that we can hire people who might not have otherwise been attracted to work for the county and give them an opportunity to come into the workforce, experience our department, and we've been able to retain a number of them over the last couple of years as full-time staff. And not having this is going to impact our ability to do that. But the other thing about the project assistants is that we are able to plug them into places where we're somebody's out on disability and we need extra filing done because a clerk can't get to it. Our project assistants can go to any part of the department and provide that assistance to help out units. The next priority, I will say the senior clerk, there is an actual person in that position, and they've been there 6-7 years perhaps. The project assistants, I have not filled, I have one half part-time project assistant. I have not filled any of those positions since July, in keeping with the county administrator's request that we try to keep things fiscally under control this year with personnel. The next position is a welfare fraud investigator. There is a long-term employee in that position. We only have one fraud investigator. It is an essential key position to monitoring. We're lucky enough that we don't have a lot of fraud, but you really do have to have the ability to, when fraud when we hear complaints from the community, we need to be able to have a fraud investigator look into those complaints and have the expertise to know how to deal with the prosecution of those complaints and deal with the district attorney and the criminal justice system around issues of fraud. The next priority is a clerk. This is a person who is currently working for us. This person provides support to administration, which would be our staff development, my office, the planning office, Tom's office. They do filing in a number of the divisions, and again, they are able to work throughout the building and provide support where needed when we're down-staffed. These kinds of positions in a department are as large as ours. We have at any given time three or four people out on disability or having babies and being happy and not coming to work for on their parenting leave. And when that happens, it really is hard to make sure we get our work done. So having staff that can help us in a variety of ways is extremely helpful to us. Now we go to our contracts. This is a really hard decision to make. This group of contracts that I'm presenting, basically, if they are not funded in some fashion, you are going to have your entire child welfare protective preventive services destroyed in the county. That the not-for-profits that are doing this work do this work. They're not paid that well. They do this work because they are. It's important to them. They've done it for years, and they have the skills to provide these services. If they're not funded, it's not like a position. You can't put the program back in place next year. If it's not funded, it goes away. And it takes years. It's taken us 10 or 15 years to develop some of these programs to the level that they're currently at. They're all outcome-based. They're all contracts where we monitor the work that's being done. We have very good relationships with them so that if we feel that their target audience We're seeing some trends in our caseloads. They're working very closely with us and making sure that they're targeting their work to those caseloads. The first one in that grouping is the parenting education. This is essential to us because we have court-ordered services in our neglect and abuse proceedings, and we are required to provide diligent efforts to reunite parents with their children. One way to do that is to allow parents the opportunity to increase their skills in parenting. Being able to send someone to an expert who has that skill to teach that training, parenting skill, is something we're not able to do within our department. The next priority is the Knowledge is Power, which is a class for women who have been abused or who are currently abused. It's a program to help them understand strategies to make changes in their life. We, again, refer women who we're involved with in Child Protective Services. It's a way of us helping them understand how to protect their children. And these classes help them understand how to take a different path to protecting themselves and their children. The next program is the Dispositional Alternatives Program at Family and Children's Services. This is a program that we've contracted with for many years. It provides intense pre-PINS services to youth who are generally referred to them by probation. They are able to work with youth to divert them from the criminal justice system, to divert them from the family court system, and to divert them from the DSS system. We work very closely with DAP when they're seeing trends or we're seeing trends to make sure the program is meeting the needs of the youth that are being referred to them. It's a strong program, and probation uses it a lot. What time is it? Okay. The next one is Liberty Resources. We have contracted with this program for 6 or 7 years now. They provide on-site mental health services for our clients who, again, are involved in where there's been an abuse or neglect petition filed with the family court. This psychologist is located in our building. They are able to see clients when clients come in to meet with caseworkers, when clients come in to have team meetings with their family. This person can see them. Many of our clients have been through the mental health system in a variety of ways over the years and are reticent to seeing anyone. And we use this program as a way to help somebody take baby steps back to understanding the value of receiving mental health services. They also work with families whose children are challenging, and we're anticipating returning children to parents, and this mental health professional provides support to families as children are returning from foster care. The next program is the Child and Family Development Program. This is through the Child Development Council. This is a COPS program. I think that's the first COPS program. This provides support to parents and caregivers prior to situations becoming to the attention of the Department of Social Services. They work very closely with us on and the Youth Services Division on identifying what are the key risk factors and providing services to families who are exhibiting those risk factors through and being identified through daycare providers or early intervention programs or Head Start programs. It's a COPS program, so that the COPS programs that we are thinking that there will continue to be funding after October of 2009, but that is something that's still not clear until we see the governor's budget. The next one is the Tompkins Community Action Primary Schools Family Support. This again, this is a COPS program. It provides support to children and families focusing on school issues. The program works in the Dryden, Freeville, and Groton area. It works closely with parents to help parents navigate the school system when children are identified as having challenges in school. It works very closely with our Child Protective Services and our Family Assessment Response Services to to divert families from further DSS intervention. The next priority is the PINS prevention. These are the probation officer positions that Frank was asking about the other day with Pat. Our department decided to fund these positions as COPS positions maybe 3 years ago. The COPS funding, the Community Optional Program Fund.
Prevention.
Thank you. I knew somebody would speak for me. Our funds to help, again, divert, specifically to help divert kids from the DSS system. And we saw that the programs that the probation officers were doing in the schools and is in their PINS diversion program, we thought it was a really good fit for us to fund probation officers to continue to do that work. So that's what that is.
How many bodies are represented by that $82,000?
Is that the PINS probation?
Yes.
That's three staff. And again, that's pulling down federal funds or state funds. The next priority is the after-hours emergency staff at the Advocacy Center. They run the shelter, the domestic violence shelter. They also provide support to women and youth who are, and children who are victims of sexual assault, sexual violence, sexual abuse, in the evenings and the weekends when people need to go to the hospital or to the REACH clinic. And then give us some cars. Books. Priority 16 we just went through all of the sort of supportive child welfare manuals and a variety of things that we use to support staff in terms of books and training materials, and put those in as priority 16.
It's time for the collection now. Are you ready for a question?
Yes.
Martha.
I'm trying to figure out whether it's better to go first or last.
If you just roll out the question, that's really just. I'll be grateful for that.
Go for it. I would just. So you said that the 65%. There was a note about the state funding that was 65% of the COPS funding. That you're not sure. That was under the Child Development Council. You're not sure if that's going to be.
It's the Child Development Council. It is the TC Action. It is the PINS prevention, and I think is that
those three.
Yeah, those three.
Okay. I just feel like there's some, maybe it's just a comment, there's so many things that this community has decided to do over the years with good reason that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and especially because in many cases you can't cure something after a lifetime of damage, and that's what this is all about. And I just when John Newman was up here the other night saying that we needed to let's cut your funding, you cut your spending, you can't raise taxes, this is such a burden, but you should give the nonprofits more work to do.
Is there a question?
No.
I don't know what the plan was.
Excuse me, really. John is not here to defend himself. We asked him to do something. He did it. Please just do questions, okay? And we'll have plenty of time for the other part. Okay.
Sorry, as the congressman said last night, that was spontaneous. So.
Oh, yeah, all right. You lie.
But he did apologize.
Okay, Dooley, you're next.
I want to thank Tom for the clarity he brought to that ghastly list. And Patricia, your clarity in your OTR explanations.
Well, thank you.
I don't have any questions. I feel quite persuaded about most of them.
Who has any questions? I'm sorry, Patricia.
No, I realize that because we're big and we're late, but we're very open to you digesting this because it is a lot, and coming back and you giving us questions to answer and coming back to answer those.
I hope we will get that list from what Tom, because I think that was a lot of information.
Mm-hmm. That
Before anyone asks any questions, I've gotten some valuable assistance from Norma, and the next meeting we could take all kinds of questions about DSS. County administration is very willing to move their time to later or some other time. Does that satisfy you?
I would like to move that we do that.
What?
Good idea.
I would like to move that we do that.
Well, I guess I'd like a sense of the room, and if Patricia and could be turned.
Yes. When is that?
Let me just say one thing. I'm going to throw myself on my pen because I realize that I should not have scheduled the health department and DSS back-to-back in the later of the second hour. So I apologize to everyone for that.
It's too late now.
Patricia, are you open to do that? Okay. Let me remind all of you one more time. Your legislature agenda is in your mailbox. Pick that up. It will not be mailed to you except one person, I think. Are there anything? Oh, I'm also still accepting money for the food. Hope the food was different or better. And okay, go ahead.
Just say that if you have questions, if you could email them to me, we could actually try to, you know, present them. We'll get this out to you tomorrow.
Okay, one quick one.
So you're going to get us your sheet and. Now, the gray sheets here that maybe you don't have, but it's got one page, all your OTRs, the cost, and then what Joe has included. The way I understand it, the full cost of yours is $509,000 and change.
That's the local cost.
The local cost. And you've included in the tentative budget $133,000 of that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good. I'll tell you.